Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to be examining some of the political background and historical background to the current unpleasantness peaking now in what used to be Yugoslavia. For the benefit of people who hear this on tape, I'm recording this on Sunday, April 4th of 1999, and there is a sorrow aplenty in what used to be Yugoslavia. Due to the limitations of time, I'm not going to be able to go into anywhere near a complete or comprehensive discussion of the background to what we're seeing. I refer interested listeners to, among other programs, For the Record segment 48, entitled Germany, Croatia, and the United States. I'll be excerpting that one this evening, and in particular, FTR 50, a 13 half-hour segment series entitled Reunited Germany, The New Danger. There's also some discussion of what I will be speaking about this evening in RFA 36, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. What used to be Yugoslavia is a composite of a number of different ethnic groups who have had an uneasy relationship with one another dating back centuries, but the current alignment and the current unpleasantness that's now unfolding in Yugoslavia dates directly to the Second World War and could be said to constitute a resumption of the combat of World War II, albeit after a 50-year hiatus, and with the United States having essentially switched sides from the Allies to the Axis. Now, let me stress that this is not in any way to excuse some of the excesses of the Milosevic government or the Serbs against some of their ethnic brethren in what used to be Yugoslavia, but the Serbs are not the aggressors in what is unfolding in what used to be Yugoslavia. They are the aggressed against. This is not to say, again, they have not committed plenty of atrocities. They have. However, their atrocities have not only been played up, but exaggerated. Atrocities against them have been downplayed, and the real history of what is taking place in what used to be Yugoslavia has been to considerable measure hidden from the American public. A nice way of starting, or a nice place to start, was a column that I certainly never expected to see. It was a relatively insightful column that appeared on the editorial page of the San Jose Mercury News on Thursday, March 25th of 1999. This column was written by Luba Brezhnev, and if the last name sounds familiar, she is the niece of former Soviet President Leonid Brezhnev. She fled the former Soviet Union in 1990, lives in California, is now a naturalized citizen, and the author of the book The World I Left Behind. And she wrote a column for that the San Jose Mercury News entitled It's a Serious Mistake. Yeah, this column reads in part as follows, skipping down. Most Americans are not aware of the very important reason for the mutual hate between Serbs and Albanians, which has deep roots in history. Americans and the president must be reminded that the Serbs were the only people within Yugoslavia who fought against Hitler during World War II. In 1940, Hitler's Axis included almost all the countries that surround Yugoslavia. Greece and Yugoslavia were the only countries in the area that firmly refused to collaborate with Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy. Massive anti-fascist demonstrations spread throughout the country, infuriated by the unwillingness to submit. Hitler, in April of 1941, ordered the bombing of the largest Yugoslavian cities, including Belgrade. The Axis army occupied Yugoslavia and divided it into several zones. Bosnia and Herzegovina were made into a part of Croatia, a pro-fascist independent state ruled by the Ustashi, that's U-S-T-A-S-H-I, the fascist movement that ruled Croatia during the war. The Germans awarded control over Kosovo to the devoted ethnic Albanians, who were, at that time, among the most fanatical allies of fascist Italy. Please note that, because although this is certainly not to excuse what the Serbs have done to the people in Kosovo, it is a region that has a very strong emotional attachment for the Serbian people, and the Serbs have a very strong historical memory of their own suffering during the Second World War, and the ethnic Albanians in Kosovo were firmly allied with their persecutors in that war. Continuing. In Croatia, the local authorities built death camps in which 350 to 450,000 Serbs, Jews, and Gypsies died. The ethnic Albanians played an active role in the policy of genocide against the Serbs and others. That's important to note because it's one of the reasons why the emotions are running so high on the Serbian side and why they have been committing some of the atrocities that they have been committing. But again, let me state that the blame for starting this war lies with Germany and the United States, and the Serbs are victims. They are not the aggressors, although they have certainly covered themselves with the blood of the innocent. Continuing. In response to these atrocities, the Serbs organized a powerful partisan movement, the National Front, which was headed by Josip Broz Tito, who was sympathetic enough to allow Albanian refugees to live on Serbian soil after the war. With help from the Red Army, the Serbs drove the Nazis from Yugoslavia. The Serbs suffered tremendous losses in World War II, 1.5 million dead, 10% of the population. It was specifically this betrayal that had helped the Nazis to commit their crimes, which laid the foundation for the Civil War of 1992. The declaration made to the Serbs by Secretary of State Madeleine Albright that the airstrike would be fierce is shocking, given that she must know that during World War II, the Bosnian Muslims had their own SS battalions, note that, and that it was only thanks to the heroism and courage of this small nation, Serbia, that many Jews avoided a hideous death in Croatia's camps and Gestapo dungeons. And we'll also note that the partisans pinned down some 100,000 German troops in what used to be Yugoslavia during World War II. They were not able to contribute to the Nazi war effort on the Eastern Front. So again, note that the complex ethnic situation in Yugoslavia and the reaction that has taken place once the Yugoslavian nation dissolved in many ways dates to the Second World War, and the ethnic Albanians not only allied with the Axis occupiers of what used to be Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was occupied by fascist Italy, fascist Bulgaria, and Nazi Germany during the war, but they also played a role in the genocide against the Serbs. Not to excuse what the Serbs are doing to the ethnic Albanians, but rather it is to understand why the sentiments run as deep as they do, and as we will see in the second part of this broadcast, the ethnic Albanians in Kosovo have been getting aid from Germany. Note also that not only did the Croatian, as we looked at in Germany, Croatia, and the U.S., FTR 48, and also in RFA programs 36 and 37, as well as FTR 50, Reunited Germany, the New Danger, the current, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia is recapitulating most of the aspects of the fascist period, the same national anthem, the same currency, even two of the same officials, and Franjo Tudjman, the president of Croatia, not only may be indicted for war crimes, but he has stated openly that he doubts the Holocaust took place. One of the details about what has taken place in the former Yugoslavia, and I think it's very significant because it is one of the things that has signaled to the Serbs that the World War II alignment is taking place once again, and that is that the president, the first president of the independent Bosnia, Ali Izbegovic, was, as a young man, a member of one of these Bosnian Muslim Waffen SS divisions that was alluded to by Luba Brezhnev. We're going to excerpt right now FTR program number 3, the phony money scandal, and we're going to hear about the Bosnian Muslim Waffen SS background of Ali Izbegovic, the first president of Bosnia when it gained its independence from Yugoslavia.
Research credit on this goes to a listener who obtained this from Belgrade in what used to be Yugoslavia. This is a letter to Mr. David Binder, or Binder, B-I-N-D-E-R, of the New York Times Washington Bureau. It is a letter from a fellow named Dr. Milan Bulahic, B-U-L-A-J-I-C. He is sort of the Serbian equivalent of Simon Wiesenthal. He is the number one chronicler of war crimes against the Serbs by the Ustashi and the Germans and their Italian and Bulgarian allies during World War II. The Ustashi were the brutal Croatian fascists allied with the Third Reich, and they slaughtered hundreds of thousands of Serbs in World War II, and in many ways when Croatia once again became, quote, independent, unquote, essentially a recapitulation of the World War II fascist regime. Basically, the Serbs decided this time they were going to do unto others before others did unto them. And indeed, there have been more war crimes committed against the Serbs than anybody else, but this is not to say, again, that the Serbs have not committed more than their share against Croatians and Muslims, or to excuse that, but rather, I think this is a situation that has to be more deeply understood. Again, research credit on this to a listener. This is a letter from Dr. Milan Bulahic, B-U-L-A-J-I-C, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation of that. to Mr. David Binder. I'm not sure about the pronunciation on that. Either of the New York Times Washington Bureau. It's datelined, or dated, I should say, November 7th of 1995. And I'm going to read this letter as it was written. The English is imperfect, but again, this is exactly how it was written. I'm not going to read the entire letter. It was real pleasure to hearing your voice again. This is what I have gathered for you about Ali Izetbegovich and the, quote, young Muslims, unquote. The present leader of the Bosnian Muslims, Ali Izetbegovich, joined the organization Young Muslims in Sarajevo on March 5, 1943. As a member of this organization, he took active part in establishment of the notorious SS Hanjar Division and collaborated with Hitler's intelligence services, Abwehr and Gestapo. By the way, he was twice convicted of crimes. He was convicted of war crimes at the end of World War II, but got a small sentence because of his youth. He was only about 18. And then later was convicted of crimes against the Yugoslavian Federation and served a longer term. I'm going to quote here from the actual text at the trial. Public prosecutor Edina Rasidovic, that's E-D-I-N-A-R-A-S-I-D-O-V-I-C, informed the court in Sarajevo as follows, quote, the defendant Izetbegovic was one of the main leaders of the youth section El Hidaja, A-E-L, capital H-I-D-A-J-A, belonging to the organization Young Muslims. From the year 1943, he worked on recruiting young Muslims for joining the notorious Hanjar Division, which was to bring later on, together with Hitler's hordes, great evil to the Yugoslav people. Unquote. Ali Izetbegovic answered this accusation by saying, quote, you are accusing me of something connected with my youth because at that time I was only 18 years old, unquote. In other words, Izetbegovic himself does not deny it. He simply says he was very young. Continuing, public prosecutor answered, quote, accused Izetbegovic, in spite of your youth that you are mentioning, I have the evidence from the Ustashi and German archives showing that you have been received for talks with the Jerusalem Mufti El Hussein, Hitler's collaborator and the founder of the notorious Hanjar Division. And he was also convicted. Ali Izetbegovic, because of his fascist activism, it's actually activition here, it should have been activism, was convicted, that's translated osuden prevesti, in the year 1946 to 3 years of prison and 2 years of deprivation of civil rights. These documents, verdict and facsimile of the documents, were presented at the trial in 1983 of 11 Muslims accused of writing the Islamic Declaration, which was signed by Ali Izetbegovic. And by the way, in 1987, his file was burglarized in what used to be Yugoslavia.
And that, again, an excerpt of FTR Program 48, Germany, or actually FTR Program number 3, the phony money scandal. What you're going to hear next, or in just a second, is an excerpt of RFA, or FTR segment, rather, 48, Germany, Croatia, and the United States. Because, indeed, the breakup of what used to be Yugoslavia and the igniting of the Balkan tinderbox was effected by Germany and by the corresponding allied political and national security forces in this country. Again, it was Germany who precipitated the breakup of Yugoslavia by extending diplomatic recognition to Croatia and Slovenia when they seceded. They then twisted arms for the rest of the European Union to follow suit, and Helmut Kohl prevailed on George Bush to do the same thing. Now, one should understand that George Bush and the administration that was in power at the time is inextricably linked with a Third Reich emigre milieu, which jumped to this country at the end of World War II, along with the Reinhard Galen spy outfit, the Project Paperclip rocket scientists, and others. And the Croatian Ustashi played a very, very strong role in this Nazi emigre milieu. And among the people embraced on the American side of this milieu are George Bush, William Casey, Ronald Reagan, Alan Dulles, and Richard Nixon, that milieu comprising three directors of the Central Intelligence Agency and three American presidents. One should note that Brent Scowcroft, George Bush's national security advisor, speaks fluent Croatian, and I don't think that is any accident. Again, by way of understanding the background in what used to be Yugoslavia, we're going to review a section of FTR 48, Germany, Croatia, and the United States, to understand the influence that the Croatian Ustashi had in the political milieu that was in power in the United States when Yugoslavia broke up.
Loftus and Ahrens write as follows in The Secret War Against the Jews.
As chairman of the Republican National Committee from 1972 to 1974, Bush may have been one of those who knew that there was something politically explosive about the Vatican-Nazi connection, especially as it applied to the Croatians. The Croatian connection to Republican electioneering was no minor scandal, no mere footnote to the 1940s. The Croatian Nazis reached to the very heart of the Republican Party's 1972 campaign to re-elect Richard Nixon as President of the United States. Just about the time that Bush was taking over the job as party chief, the U.S. State Department gave the Australian government a briefing on the role of the Croatian Nazis in American politics. David Sadleir, S-A-D-L-E-I-R, who is now the Director General of the Australian Security Intelligence Organization, equivalent to the head of the FBI or Britain's MI5, met with one of his American counterparts. Sadleir then wrote a long memo on the Nixon administration's sensitive handling of Nazis among the Republican Party's Eastern European emigre supporters. Sadleir had been told in strictest confidence that in the United States, the fascists had to be coddled because the, quote, emigre vote was important to several municipal, state, and federal office bearers. Accordingly, the Nixon administration needed to exercise care in its handling of extremist groups. As the memo makes explicit, there is no doubt that Nazis were the, quote, extremist groups that were so, quote, important, unquote, to the success of the Republican Party's election campaigns. Although Bush is not mentioned, it is clear from Sadleir's memo that the Republican leadership had taken precautions to hide its campaign association with fascist groups, particularly the Croatians. Sadleir was told by his State Department counterpart that, quote, prominent, unquote, federal, state, and municipal American politicians were discreetly advised by the Nixon administration to stay away from Croatian gatherings on April 10th, because that was the day they celebrated Hitler's establishment of Ante Pavlović's, quote, puppet state of Croatia, unquote, an artificial nation under the complete control of Nazi Germany. There are grounds to suspect that George Bush may have been among those who knew of Nixon's Nazi secret. In the first place, Bush was one of the few people whom Nixon trusted completely. In the second place, Bush's position as head of the Republican Party made him the logical person to take control of the program to warn other Republicans that they must avoid attending Croatian functions on April 10th. While there is no direct evidence that Bush had personal knowledge of Croatian fascist activities, at least before he became CIA director, it seems unlikely that Bush, as head of the Republican National Committee, could have remained out of the loop entirely. The Croatian election connection almost became a scandal during his tenure as party leader. In 1973, a large number of Australian intelligence documents were tabled for parliamentary debate and thus became open to public access. Buried in this largely unread stack of counterintelligence, police, and immigration files was a copy of Sadleir's secret briefing memo. The Nixon administration was distraught. No wonder Angleton was publicly furious with the Australians. The Croatian, quote, crown jewels, unquote, were a potential political bombshell. Unfortunately, the indolent American press missed the story completely. The truth was quite sordid. With the help of the Dulles Angleton clique, the Vatican had sent many of the Eastern European Nazis to Western countries, including the United States, Australia, and Canada, where the right wing recruited them to get out the rest of the Eastern European ethnic vote. The man who ran the political recruitment campaign in the United States was Richard Nixon. The cover-up had been going on for a long time before Angleton censored the Vatican files, but the Australians inadvertently had let a tiny corner of the story out of the bag. Although we explore the Republican-Nazi connections in chapters 10 and 13, it is important for the reader to understand the size of the scandal that Angleton was trying to bury. As a young congressman, Nixon had been Alan Dulles's confidant. They both blamed Governor Dewey's razor-thin loss to Truman in the 1948 presidential election on the Jewish vote. When he became Eisenhower's vice president in 1952, Nixon was determined to build his own ethnic base. Vice President Nixon's secret political war of Nazis against Jews in American politics was never investigated at the time. The foreign language speaking Croatians and other fascist emigre groups had a ready-made network for contacting and mobilizing the Eastern European ethnic bloc. There was a very high correlation between CIA domestic subsidies to fascist, quote, freedom fighters, unquote, during the 1950s and the leadership of the party's ethnic campaign groups. The motive for the under-the-table financing was clear. Nixon used Nazis to offset the Jewish vote for the Democrats. In 1952, Nixon had formed an ethnic division within the Republican National Committee, quote, displaced fascists hoping to be returned to power by an Eisenhower-Nixon liberation policy signed on with the committee. In 1953, when Republicans were in office, the immigration laws were changed to admit Nazis, even members of the SS. They flooded into the country. Nixon himself oversaw the new immigration program. As vice president, he even received Eastern European fascists in the White House. After a long, long journey, the Croatian Nazis had found a new home in the United States where they had reestablished their networks. In 1968, Nixon promised that if he won the presidential election, he would create a permanent ethnic council within the Republican Party. Previously, the ethnic division was allowed to surface only during presidential campaigns. Nixon's promise was carried out after the 1972 election during Bush's tenure as chairman of the Republican National Committee. The Croatian Ustashes became an integral part of the campaign structure of Republican politics, along with several other fascist organizations. Shortly after Australia released its Croatian memo, Nixon was forced to resign as a result of the Watergate scandal. At the same time, Bush was transferred from his post as head of the Republican National Committee to the CIA. According to the, quote, old spies, unquote, George Bush, a very likable fellow, was appointed head of the CIA partly because his good reputation in Congress would help to fend off any more congressional inquiries, particularly Elizabeth Holtzman's ongoing investigation of Nazis in the United States. The last thing Bush or the Republican Party needed was an expose of the very origins of Angleton's Croatian Nazi connection. By the way, that refers to James Jesus Angleton, longtime CIA counterintelligence chief. Continuing, there was a real risk in the 1970s that the congressional investigations of Nixon might collide with the congressional investigations of Nazis. Bush was sent to the CIA to ensure that Nixon's garbage remained buried. As we're going to see now, when Nixon became president, he formally coalesced this Eastern European fascist group into an element of the Republican Party. 20 years after the birth of, returning to the secret war against the Jews, 20 years after the birth of Israel, the Nazis were coming out of the closet in the United States. One of the most prominent Eastern European fascists was Laszlo Pastor, P-A-S-Z-T-O-R, the founding chair of Nixon's Republican Heritage Group's council. During World War II, Pastor was a diplomat in Berlin representing the Arrow Cross government of Nazi Hungary, which supervised the extermination of the Jewish population. Skipping down, Nixon kept, Pastor labored on the fringes of the Republican Party's ethnic division during the Eisenhower administration, but the loyal fascists were always dropped as soon as the election campaign was over. The ethnic division was allowed to be active only during presidential campaigns. In 1968, Nixon changed all that. According to Pastor, Nixon personally promised to establish a permanent ethnic organization in the Republican Party if he became president. Nixon kept his promise. As discussed in Chapter 5, the 1972 secret Australian memo revealed that the Nixon administration had discovered that fascist groups were useful to get out the ethnic votes in several key states. Nixon needed the Nazi vote to avoid another Dewey debacle. Just a few more votes would have made all the difference in Nixon's race against Kennedy in 1960. In several key states, the Eastern European vote could provide the margin for victory in 1968. The road to temptation was clear, and after Nixon won, he approved Pastor's appointment as chief organizer of the ethnic council. Not surprisingly, Pastor's, quote, choices for filling emigre slots as the council was being formed included various Nazi collaborationist organizations, unquote. The former fascists were coming out of the closet in droves, and as we shall see, one of the people who was instrumental, apparently, according to many of the sources that Loftus and Ahrens relied on, one of the people instrumental in helping to cement this permanent Nazi division of the Republican Party, and I mean that quite literally, including the Croatian Ustashi, was none other than George Bush, returning to the secret war against the Jews. The most intriguing of Bush's early connections was to Richard Nixon, who as vice president had supervised Allen Dulles' covert planning for the Bay of Pigs. For years, it has been rumored that Dulles' client, George Bush's father, was one of the Republican leaders who recruited Nixon to run for Congress and later convinced Eisenhower to take him on as vice president. There is no doubt that the two families were close. George Bush described Nixon as his, quote, mentor, unquote. Nixon was a Bush supporter in his very first tilt at politics during his unsuccessful run for the Senate in 1964 and turned out again when he entered the House 2 years later. Skipping down, it was Bush who fulfilled Nixon's promise to make the, quote, ethnic emigres a permanent part of Republican politics. In 1972, Nixon's State Department spokesman confirmed to his Australian counterpart that the ethnic groups were very useful to get out the vote in several key states. Bush's tenure as head of the Republican National Committee exactly coincided with Laszlo Pastor's 1972 drive to transform the Heritage Groups Council into the party's official ethnic arm. The groups Pastor chose as Bush's campaign allies were the emigre fascists whom Dulles had brought to the United States. It seems clear that George Bush, as head of the Republican National Committee in 1972, must have known who these, quote, ethnics, unquote, really were. Columns by Jack Anderson and others had already made it clear in 1971 that Nixon was a little too close to the fascist groups. The Nazis for Nixon problem was one of those scandals that Bush inherited when he took over the Republican National Committee. Skipping down, as head of the Republican National Committee, it seems likely that Bush did have, quote, full knowledge, unquote, as did Richard Johnson of the State Department, that the ethnic fascists were being coddled because the ethnic groups were useful to get out the vote in several key states. As we shall see, or as we're about to see, in addition to Richard Nixon and George Bush, both of them obviously, eventually presidents of the United States, in addition to Alan Dulles, later CIA director like George Bush, two other key politicians were involved with this very same program. One of these is Ronald Reagan. Skipping down, in the U.S., in a footnote in The Secret War Against the Jews, in the U.S. National Archives, there is 1950s newsreel footage of a young Ronald Reagan asking for donations to the Crusade for Freedom. This organization was later acknowledged as a covert front for the distribution of funds to the OPC's network of emigre fascists. See John Loftus, The Ballara Secret, Alfred A. Knopf, 1982, pages 107 and 141. In essence, Reagan's public crusade raised less than 1% of the funds. The rest came from CIA covert accounts that had been laundered through the State Department. The money was distributed to Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, and the Institute of Russian Research in Germany. All three organizations had Nazi war criminals on the payroll, as CBS's 60 Minutes program documented in 1982. So Ronald Reagan was, of course, one of the spokespersons for the Crusade for Freedom, under the auspices of which many of these Nazi war criminals were put to work for the U.S. government, and some of them imported under the Richard Nixon-supervised Nazi resettlement program in the U.S. One of the people critically involved along with Richard Nixon and Alan Dulles and Ronald Reagan in this operation was William Casey, who later, of course, became Ronald Reagan's campaign manager and CIA director. In another footnote from The Secret War Against the Jews, we find Bill Casey, who later became CIA director under Ronald Reagan, also worked in Germany after World War II on Dulles's Nazi Freedom Fighters program. When he returned to New York, Casey headed up another OPC front, the International Rescue Committee, which sponsored the immigration of these fascists to the United States. Casey's committee replaced the International Red Cross as the sponsor of Dulles' recruits. Confidential interviews, former members of the OPC, former members, by the way, this information was from confidential interviews with former members of the OPC and members of the British Foreign and Commonwealth Office. So again, we see three eventual presidents of the United States and three eventual directors of the CIA, the presidents being Nixon, Reagan, and Bush, the CIA directors being Bush, Dulles, and Casey, being involved with this particular program to import Nazi war criminals into the United States and put them to work for the government as well as the intelligence services. The Croatian Ustashes were one of the key elements in that particular program.
That an excerpt from For the Record program number 48, Germany, Croatia, and the United States. And the text you heard was excerpted from John Loftus and Mark Aaron's landmark text, The Secret War Against the Jews, published in hard and soft cover by St. Martin's Press, copyright 1994. In our next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with analysis of the background to the conflict in Kosovo. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.